Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, ESPN's Seth Walder joins me to break down one positive thing for each eliminated postseason team to take away from the 2022 season. Something positive about the Texans, the Bears, every team that is wallowing. Is wallowing the right word? I think it's wallowing in mediocrity as we hit the end of the NFL season. But first, I wanted to tell you about another ESPN podcast, and that is in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions. They present Kyle Brandt's Basement, led by NFL Network's Good Morning Football host, Kyle Brandt. This Sunday through Thursday show explores the ins and outs of the NFL through lively guest interviews, including Bills quarterback Josh Allen, every Tuesday. That's Kyle Brandt's Basement. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast. Now, here's Seth Walder. All right, joining me now, here as promised, on the Bill Barnwell Show, someone we've been meaning to have on for several weeks now. We've gone back and forth. Thankfully, we are lucky to have him here today. One of the best people in the business when it comes to breaking down the NFL. It's my colleague, the sports analytics writer, I believe is what it sounds like for ESPN, an expert on many things, but certainly analytics is one of them. It's Seth Walder. Seth, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. That's too kind. And just for the record for everyone, it was all my fault, to be clear, that while I wasn't on over these weeks, making it difficult for Bill.
No, that's not. You should have been on earlier. Frankly, now we are lucky to have you here, Seth. You do such a great job looking at the league as a whole, seeing what's happening, what the trends are, using the numbers we have here at ESPN to understand the game better. Today, we're going to focus maybe in a different direction than I think a lot of people might think. As the playoffs approach, we'll have plenty of time to discuss those teams. But today, we are going to focus on the teams who don't have any hopes of playing deep into the postseason, the teams for whom Sunday, and I guess Saturday for a couple teams, will be the end of the NFL season, the teams who are out of the postseason race. And we're just going to try and find one positive to take away for each of those teams as they enter the offseason. Seth, I believe you took the AFC teams. I took the NFC teams. So please go first. Let me know. Pick an AFC team that is out of the postseason race and let me know what is one thing that we can be optimistic about for them, or they can be optimistic about for themselves heading into 2023.
Okay. I had brief internal panic that I thought all of a sudden for a second I'd been assigned to the NFC and we'd both done the AFC, but we're good. I'm going to start with the team that I think this is the easiest to answer for, and that is the New York Jets, because I think the answer is basically, outside of quarterback, almost everything. I mean, there's so much that's gone right for that team this year outside of quarterback. You've got Sauce Gardner's been unbelievable, top three corner. I think you had him on your all-pro list. Like, I agree with that completely. His numbers are insane. Opposite him has been an incredible free agent acquisition, DJ Reed. They've got Quinnen Williams being really productive. My guy, Bryce Huff, when he's allowed to play, is always getting after the quarterback. C.J. Mosley's had a nice year. Garrett Wilson, if you look at our receiver tracking metrics, is like a top 15 receiver in the NFL already. Breece Hall, before he got injured, was playing well. There's so much here that I think that the Jets are, and this is a dangerous game, but like, they are in range of a roster that is good enough to be a legitimate, real contender with a, let's just say, Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback. And I say it's a dangerous game because, like, those windows with rosters like that, they do not last long. They are brief. It's probably there for them next year. But you can't bank on that being like a long-term solution. But I do think that is where they are. There's a lot right there.
Well, the Jags come to mind, right? You know, a team from a few years ago that were built around a young defense. They added a couple pieces in free agency. It looked like they were, you know, they made a deep run into the postseason. They came within really a blown call, maybe, of beating the Patriots and going to the Super Bowl. I think a lot of people were excited about, hey, you know, they have a really promising future if they can at least get a competent quarterback play. And then it fell apart very quickly, to your point. I wonder, you know, we've all seen the Robert Saleh quotes. You used to cover the Jets. You know, the Robert Saleh quote about we're sticking with Zach Wilson come hell or high water. You're the expert here when it comes to parsing what coaches actually mean versus what they say. Do you believe that?
I don't believe that. I wouldn't say I'm the expert. I just think, like, I'm going to rely on common sense, which says that the Jets quarterback in 2023 is not on their roster right now. Mm-hmm. And I have more faith in the people in that building that they recognize, they must recognize that too. So mm-hmm. I think that they'll go elsewhere. I think your Jags example is perfect because, yeah, it fell apart, but I also think that's exactly the reason why they can be like a true, like that Jags team could have won the Super Bowl. And so if you put a competent quarterback on this roster, you really can go far if it all breaks right.
Yeah, absolutely. Who that guy is, we will wait and see. I will go with a team that I think also has a solid defense, although nowhere near where the Jets have been this year. I'll go with the Commanders. And this is going to be a backhanded one relatively to some of the other ones. I will say they got the Carson Wentz out of their system in 1 year. They are not going to fool themselves into thinking that they can fix Carson Wentz again. Sunk costs are a valuable thing to realize and recognize. And I think there's enough promise on their roster where, again, I don't think they're as good as the Jets, you know, outside of the quarterback position. I think there's questions about their secondary, which has been improved this year, but still not perfect by any means. Chase Young has not been, really present until the past couple weeks of the season. The offense, I think there's plenty of playmakers to be excited about, but it does feel like if they can solve the quarterback situation with one of the other guys you mentioned, if it's Carr going to the Jets, maybe Garoppolo or vice versa, it does kind of feel like they could be a competitive team. So the Carson Wentz move didn't look great in the moment, doesn't look great now, but at least they're through with Carson Wentz in Washington.
That's some dangerous foreshadowing of my Colts positive.
You want to go ahead with your Colts one.
Okay. The Colts were the one that was the hardest for me. Yeah. I couldn't really find, I'm not sure there's anything that was like, there's some spots where they've had players play okay. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest positive is what you said. Like they, at least for the Colts, they sold low. They actually got something from Washington here. Mm-hmm. They sold low on Wentz, but at least they recognized that, which was probably a harder call than it is for Washington, because Wentz, outside of how that season turned out at the end last year, he wasn't as bad last season.
No.
Which also, you know, backhanded again. But, you know, what does that say about Frank Reich, considering what he got out of Carson Wentz again? Yes. And what Washington was not able to. So, that's a positive for Frank Reich. Not so much the Colts, since mm-hmm. he's no longer there. I think that has to be the positive for that team too. But I agree with you for Washington. At least they're not in a situation where they're going to fool themselves about Taylor Heinicke or Carson Wentz again next year.
Yeah, and I think that's my only concern with the Colts is that yes, I do believe Ron Rivera, assuming he's there, which I think it's likely he comes back for another year, he's learned his lesson. He's not going to stick with Carson Wentz again. Has Jim Irsay learned his lesson? like, can we be confident that Jim Irsay is going to make common sense maneuvers this offseason? Because to me, I feel like after what happened during this season, I feel like anything is on the table. Seth, you could be coaching the Colts next year for all I know.
Yeah, that would be a shock to me.
Will but you know what? I guess will you come on the podcast if you are the head coach of the Colts?
I promise. I'll do a weekly spot with you. I won't even charge.
Thank you. I mean, I would love to believe that Jim Irsay is going to hire a steady hand at coach and they're going to draft a quarterback high and they'll be fine. But I don't think we can say that with any sort of confidence after what happened this year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I can't. I think the Colts, you look at that team and there's just so much to be concerned about there. I can't help. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to think about who's, you know, if you were the head coach of the Colts, Bill, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering which ESPN analyst would you hire as your coordinators?
That's a good question. I mean, I'd have to hire Mina. Like,
yeah, I would too.
Like,
yeah.
I would just be concerned that Mina would then take my job in like 2 months. Like, she would become the head coach very quickly because they're like, oh, this here's Bill, but smarter and more thoughtful. We should hire this person instead.
Good point. You got to hire someone. You're gonna have to hire like another ex coach floating around as like a interim buffer. You know?
Yeah, I think I would hire maybe Chris Berman. I think I would just hire the loud, like you know, like the most revered person, because you can't be mad at Chris Berman. He's a legend, you know. Like, it'd be hard to be upset at Chris Berman if he doesn't know how to coach a defense. But
no way, he's gonna fire everybody up.
Exactly. We get one vibes coach and one brains coach. That is my solution if I take over as head coach of the Colts, which, please God, is never going to happen. I'll ask about this. I know we're gonna probably get to the Broncos in a minute, but I'm writing for this week, I think, about the possible coaching opportunities that are coming available, and I would assume the Colts will be one of them. Is the Colts job, if you were offered the Colts job and the Broncos job right now, which would be more appealing to you given their respective situations?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Part of it, I think, would have to depend on would have to depend on the assurances, I think, that you're getting from ownership. Like, if you're taking that Broncos job, I think you're going to want to be like, I'm going to try and fix Russell Wilson, but I want it to be clear that if I can't, that is not going to be a reflection on me, and I'm going to get a chance with the next guy.
Yeah.
And so if you don't get that kind of assurance, then I think the Colts is better, because at least there's like a blank slate there. Denver obviously has a lot more going for it mm-hmm. on the roster.
For sure.
So I think I would lean Denver just because of that.
There's some confirmation bias there, right? You know, like with, you know, like you're not, no, they're not going to offer that job to anybody who says, Russell Wilson stinks. You guys are doomed. Like,
true.
Just not going to work out. So I think whoever they hire is going to have to be very optimistic about their ability to turn around Russell Wilson.
That's true. Ooh, that does push me the other way. I'm still going to go Denver. I just think it's going to be easier for you to like surprisingly have success there than it will mm-hmm. be in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Even though I do sometimes like a blank slate situation, it's just not, I don't know. I'll lean Denver, but neither one's great. You know, but
yeah, neither of them feel especially exciting right about now, but there two people will be coaching those teams come next September. Do you want to go with the Broncos, actually, since we were just talking about them? Is there a sure. positive for them to take away?
I think I'll say two, because I think the obvious one is Surtain and that defense, and Kaywan Williams is really good in the slot yep. there too. So the corners have been good. I think an under the radar one was Jerry Jeudy this year. His receiver tracking metrics this year, he had a 79 open score and a 40 catch score. Mm-hmm. And that catch score does not sound good, right? But that's a career high for him. I mean, like the what Jerry Jeudy does, he gets open, doesn't convert the catch. That has been true and a problem over his career. To have a 40 catch score with Russell Wilson, which means I think it's a little bit deflated in that catch score, the way it works, it's partially considering who's throwing to you. Russell Wilson over his career has been a very accurate quarterback. And so even though Russell Wilson's played really poorly this year, it still is looking at Russell Wilson as a mm-hmm. whole. And so what I mean is that if you can get Jerry Jeudy to just be average, if he could just get up to average in terms of his ability to convert the catch, I think he turns into not an exceptional receiver, mm-hmm. but really good. I mean, 79 open score. Stephon Diggs is an 82. Okay. So you're like, you know, Diggs catches everything too. So there's a difference, but like, I do think that has been a positive And it's especially been true over the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. I was definitely ready to pan a team that overpaid for Jeudy at the trade deadline. And he's been better since then. So, I mean, like, and between some of these guys, like Sertan and Williams, like you said, there is a foundation. Williams is older, but like Sertan and Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, there is a foundation of a roster that could be successful here, but it's going to need a good quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, this was the same problem we were looking at last year where it's, oh, their roster looks kind of interesting. They just need a quarterback. And then they got a quarterback and they still need a quarterback, which I think is the concerning part with the Denver Broncos. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there's definitely reasons to be excited here in Denver. Let me take an NFC team here. I'll go with the team that was reportedly interested in trading for Russell Wilson and pretty much every other quarterback before settling for Baker Mayfield. That's the Carolina Panthers, where I know they lost last week. They were winning. They were honestly outplaying the Bucs for a good chunk of that game. Disappointing they missed the postseason. But I do think there's reasons to be optimistic about their running game. And I think their running game in particular, after trading away Christian McCaffrey, who's supposed to be, and who is really good, one of the best running backs in football, one of the highest paid running backs in football. But not only did they get a 2, a 3, and a 4 from the 49ers for Christian McCaffrey, but their running game improved after McCaffrey left with Deonta Foreman and Chuba Hubbard, who are not exactly superstar backs. I mean, Hubbard was a mid-round pick. Foreman signed for, I think, pretty close to the minimum as a backup. So I think it was kind of a realization of, we can also, you know, not have to rely on a $16 million a year running back to have a running game. And for a team that's traded away draft capital to go after quarterbacks in years past, now they add draft capital for CMC. They have extra picks to build out their roster, which, you know, has shown some promise over the past couple months.
Yeah, I think this is another one where the roster has a lot to kind of like. It's like a good foundation, and I think there's even upside. Like, I think Ike Ekwonu hasn't been very good, but the first round rookies are often not. So, sure. Like, what if he turns into a good player? And Sam Darnold's probably playing the best football of his career, and Brian Burns is a really good pass rusher. They still should have taken the two first for him, but they didn't.
Can you imagine if the Rams had either made that deal or the Christian McCaffrey trade, and then everything else that happened to them happens? Like, they would feel even more deeper in the muck than they are at the moment.
And imagine how good you would feel sitting on the Rams' 2024 and 2025 first round picks.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like, you know, in the NBA, teams are always like, they always want picks farther in the future because they, you know, who knows, it could be the first overall pick. And NFL teams don't seem to think about it quite that way yet. But man, the upside for those Rams picks would have been really tremendous.
Yeah, of course.
But okay, but back to Carolina, like there's a lot to like there. I think there is.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's plenty to be optimistic about. And again, we'll see what happens. They might, you know, retain Steve Wilks as the head coach. They have quarterback questions. They still have the two most important, to me at least, the two most important spots in an organization to fill with head coach and quarterback, but a lot to like around that core.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Let me get to the Rams, actually. I know we did two for you. Let me get to the Rams as well. This is a hard one. I mean, you know, you don't go from Super Bowl champions to having every one of your key players injured, some of whom having perhaps career-threatening injuries in the case of Matthew Stafford. I know he said he's going to come back, but pretty scared about his future. Hasn't been great, but I will say there have been some signs that the players on the back end of their roster can be contributors, and they need to be given their philosophy. They do get a lot of compensatory picks, but they do trade away a bunch of draft capital. They are a team that likes to go out and have an expensive core. So they need some of these guys to be contributors, not just this year, but also next year. And Michael Hoyt has stepped in, even though he's a 310-pound edge defender, which teams have taken advantage of here and there. He's been a useful player. Laurel Murchison was signed from the Tennessee practice squad a couple weeks ago and had 2 sacks against the Broncos in that blowout of Russell Wilson. Kobe Durant had 2 picks in that Broncos game and has been a regular in defense over the past 5 weeks. And again, like, has he been perfect? No. Teams have targeted him, but he's also made some plays. They found meaningful reps for Tutu Atwell. Tutu Atwell is averaging nearly 2 yards per route on 139 routes this season. You know, is he going to be a number one receiver? No, that's never going to happen. But can he be a 3 or a 3A? Yeah, maybe. And can there be a meaningful role for him in the offense next year? I think so. So even though this is a hopeless season, a totally ruined season by injuries, at least they're maybe finding some pieces that can play meaningful roles for cheap, you know, in the 30 to 40 spots on their roster. So when the stars do come back, they have more help around them next year.
That's good. Those are good.
I tried my best.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're diving deep. Can I throw one more into your bucket? Ernest Please. Jones.
Yeah.
He leads all linebackers in run stop win rate, or he's first or second, I should say. I mean, like, it's not everything. It's not the only responsibility a linebacker has, but that's something.
For sure. And you know what? I mean, like, they have to have guys like that come through. Ernest Jones is a 3rd round pick. He was great during the playoff run last year. He was really impressive in the Super Bowl. He really, you know, looked like this could be a breakout year for him. You know, his responsibilities are not quite what they were a year ago because of Bobby Wagner. He's sort of in a slightly different role. But, you know, again, finding a guy like that who can play middle linebacker for $600,000 for 2 years or $600,000 a year for 2 years is really valuable. It lets you take money and put it elsewhere. And that is, I think, where the Rams are right now, is just finding those pieces. Can you give me, Seth, another AFC team?
Sure. All right, let's go for the Browns.
Okay.
I think Cleveland, the offense was really successful with Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a 0.07 EPA per play when Brissett was on the field this season. That is equivalent to the Dolphins and Cowboys season-long numbers. That puts them in the kind of 7-9 range. And, like, there's a lot of reasons for that. Amari Cooper was a good acquisition. He played well. Donovan Peoples-Jones emerged as an elite contested catch receiver. Nick Chubb is an exceptional runner. I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. And as has been the case for years, they have a great pass protection unit. Jacoby Brissett played well too. This is a bit of a backhanded one, I will also say, because given the context of that, that is a huge red flag, even morality or lack thereof aside, of the Deshaun Watson.
For sure.
Deshaun Watson playing. I mean, where with Watson on the field, they are 30th in EPA per play. And I know there's been some weather and whatever, but, like, think about all the things we just talked about as being reasons why they were able to have success in the first half of the year, offensively on a play-to-play basis, not record-wise. And then Watson comes in, and then they haven't been able to do anything. You know, they played, like, one of the worst offenses in the league. That's a huge problem. That's a huge problem. Maybe it's rust. Maybe it is. But that ought to be a huge red flag.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's been worse than Russell Wilson has been this year. And as bad as the Russell Wilson contract is, it is not as bad as the Deshaun Watson deal. That's the Russell Wilson contract plus another $100 million fully guaranteed for Deshaun Watson. So if it's rust, okay. Better see it next year, because if it's the first half of next year and Deshaun Watson is playing this way, that's going to be the worst contract in football, and not by an insignificant margin. And Jacoby Brissett, to your point, I think has earned at least the chance to be, like, a priority backup, where he's going to have either a bridge opportunity next year where he's going to be the starter for a team that drafts a rookie in the first round, or a backup role where he is making $7-8 million a year, where he's one of the higher end backups in football. Because, again, like, were the Browns great with him in the lineup? No, but their defense was abysmal. And Jacoby Brissett was a very effective passer. He's not perfect, but he protects the football, does not make a ton of mistakes. He usually, when he does throw interceptions, it's usually in moments where they have to get a big play and there's no choice, like they're late in the fourth quarter. And he's incredible on sneaks. He picks up a couple first downs a game, it feels like, with his ability to convert sneaks. So I think there's a valuable player there for a team that's not going to ask him to be, you know, a quarterback that he's not. And good teams will find a spot for him. He'll definitely have a role next year somewhere.
Totally, totally agree. Has to be one of those guys that you go after if you're planning on drafting someone and you want someone who can start half the year for you. You got to think he's one of the best options.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of offenses that were surprisingly effective, they took a lot of flack this year, all season, for their tendencies, especially if you were someone who invested heavily in fantasy football in Drake London or Kyle Pitts. Not that I would know anybody like that. But the Falcons and Arthur Smith, they were ninth in the NFL in EPA per play before Marcus Mariota was benched during their bye week. And that is with Kyle Pitts being injured for a chunk of the year. It's with a running game that did not have Cordarrelle Patterson for a chunk of the year. It's with Drake London kind of, you know, still figuring things out as a rookie. Although I do want to hear how London looks in terms of our receiving metrics. This was an offense that was good, actually legitimately good, when nobody thought it was going to be an effective offense. At least I don't know anybody who thought it was going to be an effective offense. So I think there's lots of reasons to think next year, with their cap situation finally cleared out after eating their vegetables for the last year or two, with a top 10 pick, or with, I don't know exactly where they picked, but they picked pretty high in the first round. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about for the Falcons, where they showed, even though they weren't a good team this year, they were competitive and they were a lot better on offense than anybody gave them credit for.
Do you feel like this positive here is like the Arthur Smith positive?
Kind of. Like, yeah. Like, you know, I mean, he has been combative, shall we say, but like they're playing hard for him. You know, I don't think you can say that for a season where they had very little hope going in, that this team has not been competitive. Like, they have been in pretty much every single game this year. They lost to the Bengals by 18, and that is their only loss or win by double digits. Granted, you want to blow teams out. No, they beat the Niners by 14 points, actually. So that was the exception, but they're playing competitive football. And I think this was a team that I know I expected to be one of the worst teams in football. I don't think I was alone in that conversation, and I was wrong. And I think the Falcons deserve a lot of credit for, and Arthur Smith deserves a lot of credit for, getting the most out of the roster he had.
Also, I like Tyler Algier.
Yeah.
Who, I'll just say this, Kenneth Walker is the odds on favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year right now. Tyler Algier is 100-1 with almost the exact same numbers. I mean, truly, like the same basic numbers and better advanced numbers, mm-hmm. for what it's worth. Something I noticed this week, he's within 36 yards of Kenneth Walker.
That seemed pretty significant if you were interested in that kind of stuff.
For whatever it's worth.
For whatever it's worth. Do you want to give me another one from the AFC, Seth?
Sure. Let's go with the Texans, actually. Okay. Houston, I think I thought going in that Houston would be the harder one to figure out, but it wasn't. The Colts were much more difficult. So we put our pass rush win rates, the leaderboard, up on ESPN. We're hoping to maybe blow that out and get everybody up there at some point. Mm-hmm. And it shows the top 10 players at each position. So this is not out there, but number 11 and number 12 at pass rush win rate at edge are Obanaya, Okoronkwo, and Jerry Hughes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And so I think Hughes, by the way, is one of the most insane stats I've ever seen. He has 9 sacks and 10 QB hits, which is almost impossible to do. And I watched the 10th QB hit, and it barely qualifies.
The but old Vic Beasley.
Yes.
Vic Beasley had 15 and a half sacks and 16 quarterback hits.
No. Yep. Really?
He was first team all pro. Yep.
That's incredible. Wow.
That was probably one of the easiest, like, controversial things I've ever done. We're being like, yeah, Vic Beasley's actually not that good. And it was like, you know, like he had 8 sacks that were just like, you know, drive-by strip sacks. And I was like, well, that's going to be hard to do again, I think. And he has 18 sacks over the ensuing 4 seasons before falling out of football.
That's a W, Bill.
Small victory for me. I knew one thing 6 years ago. I'm going to take that victory lap here now on my own podcast. but you're right, though. You're right, though. Like, absolutely.
That's pretty good. Now, he's a free agent, I think. But, like, he doesn't play, like, a crazy amount. But I think it's a good example of finding someone who was, a backup elsewhere, given more playing time, able to see some success. And I don't know if they'll hang on to him or not. But, like, that's what you're hoping to see is things like that. And Hughes is obviously a veteran, been around forever. So who knows what this means for Houston's future, but those are positives. Like that's pretty good between those two players there, which I don't think you would ever have expected going into the season.
Yeah. I mean, I was honestly surprised the Texans did not trade Jerry Hughes at the trade deadline. Don't know if he wanted to stay. He's from Houston originally, grew up in Houston. I don't know if he signed there and said, hey, like, you know, don't trade me. But if he was available, I was shocked that no one traded for him because he's been legitimately really good. He's kind of, he's tuckered out a bit over the final few weeks of the year. But I mean, he was a legit, like he was creating pass pressure. And I know it hasn't always resulted in hits, but the win rate metrics we have point to the effect he was having for that Texans defense. Let me go with the other team at the very bottom of the standings, the Chicago Bears, who could at least theoretically win the first overall pick this weekend, if I'm not mistaken, if the Texans do pull off an upset. And I'll go with the Bears, and I'll go with their secondary, because I think there's reasons to be excited about their young players in their secondary. You talked about the Offensive Rookie of the Year candidacy. I think Jaquan Brisker is not going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, but I think he's probably like a low-end candidate, maybe in like the 5 to 7 range. I think he's been a player who has been, you know, he's flashed. And I think we're sort of spoiled right now. Like, you know, when you get someone like a Pat Surtain or a Sauce Gardner in year one, and you just think, oh my God, like they're immediately a superstar. That's rare for young defensive backs. That is the exception as opposed to the rule. And so I think Brisker flashing has been impressive. I think Kyler Gordon, again, has also been, you know, a guy who's flashed. I think Jalen Johnson has been injured, but he's been good in years past. Mm-hmm. And I think Eddie Jackson got better before he got hurt. So I think we'll see what happens with the personnel. We'll see what happens with the scheme. I think they need a better pass rush because the pass rush there has been pretty messy. But I have confidence about Eberflus kind of coaching these guys up and getting them to be a better secondary. And I think there's reasons to be optimistic given how they've played at certain stretches this year.
I think that's all fair. And yeah, you mentioned Jalen Johnson. The beginning of this season, I think he had like absurd numbers through 2 games, mm-hmm. like absurdly good. I mean, he'd been targeted like I'm gonna mess this up, but he'd been targeted like 1 time through 2 games, yep. which was incredible. I sort of think they have another player who also is in that like lower. It doesn't play a position, wouldn't actually get considered, but in that rookie of the year conversation on the other side of the ball, and that's Braxton Jones. Mm-hmm. Like he's been pretty good. And it's not just our win rates, like win rates and PFF agree that Braxton Jones has been a good tackle for mm-hmm. the Bears. I know it's a Bears offensive line. People feel like they're worse than our numbers give them credit for, but so who knows, maybe we're crazy, but his numbers are good.
That's also a really tough quarterback to block for. And Justin Fields, like whatever benefits Justin Fields brings to the table. And I think they're significant. Like, that is a really hard player to block for when you have someone who's bailing out of the pocket. It's going to make it difficult to judge offensive line play. So, you know, I think our numbers are hopefully, you know, at least a sign that there's some positives to work with there. And I think, again, this was a year where they were doing the same thing the Falcons were. They were eating their cap vegetables, getting aligned. They were trading. They were mostly acquiring draft picks outside of the Chase Claypool trade, which we won't talk about here as positives. But we will say that they're in better shape to compete next year. And if they can find 3, 4, 5, 6 players this year on their roster who they can feel like can be good NFL starters as the rest of their roster gets better, that's great. That's exactly what you want from them here in 2022. Do you have two more left?
I have one more left.
Okay, what's your final one?
I meant down ballot for Braxton Jones too, just to be clear. I'm not saying sure. like you meant with Brisker. The Raiders are my team left, right? Oh, yeah, that's all I've got left. The Raiders, okay. I think this is also sort of a tricky one. The two positives you could take away from the Raiders would be, you know, their problem was defense, which is not offense. And I mean that is a good way because it's the easier thing to fix from a year to year standpoint. So their offense was okay, but they're also going to probably be resetting at quarterback. I think like the real positive was probably their offensive line, which has been solid, and particularly Colton Miller, who's already established and paid. But I think this was his best season yet. And he's become a really good left tackle. And this year, I think it was not just his best pass protecting season, but his best run blocking season. And which is not always, he has not always been as good of a run blocker, or he hasn't been as good as a run blocker. So I think at least if you're going into the situation where you're going to be restarting at quarterback, if you're established at left tackle, you're set there. Like that is a positive you can take away if you're going to be going through this process. But obviously not a very weird season for Vegas.
Yes, certainly a season where it's felt like they've either been in an incredibly dramatic comeback victory or an incredibly heartbreaking loss every single week. I think they'll be better next year if they have a solid quarterback. I think they were a little unlucky on the whole this year, but who knows what they're going to do at quarterback. I anything from Tom Brady to Josh McDaniels, what was the quote? I can get any high schooler and make him a Pro Bowler. That's what Tyler Palumbis said, Josh McDaniels said when he was with the Broncos. So maybe it'll be a high school quarterback. Maybe it'll be Tom Brady. Who knows?
Yeah, we've tried the, taking ESPN to coaching route. I'm waiting for the ESPN to quarterback route. Maybe Vegas goes that way,
Well, Dan Orlovsky is on
staff. We've got some ex-pros.
We got a guy. We will see. I have two more. So there was one more in the NFC than there was in the AFC. So I'll finish up with these two. Saints, I think, is pretty obvious. It's Chris Olave, who has been really impressive as a rookie. 79 open, 79 catch ratings by our metrics. Only 41 for yards after catch, but with very inconsistent quarterback play, he's averaged 2.48 yards per route run. And we have route run data going back through 2007, the only rookies who averaged more yards per route run over that time frame, over the last 15 seasons or 16 seasons, I forget how the math works. But it's A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham, and Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, it is for bona fide superstars. And then Chris Olave, who again has played with Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston all season. I think people, are sort of sleeping on how good he has been this year as an immediate number one receiver for the Saints. So we could take issue with the trades they made. Certainly don't know if it was the best thing for their future to make the trades they've made, but they did land a superstar with Chris Olave.
Is he your offensive rookie of the year?
He is my offensive rookie of the year, but I don't know that he will be the NFL's offensive rookie of the year.
I agree with that. Me too. Yeah, I think it's close for him and Wilson for me, but I don't know. It's a close race.
And I think either pick is fine. Like, I don't think.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be wrong to pick Garrett Wilson. I mean, you could pick Kenneth Walker. Like, I'm not super enthused about Kenneth Walker as a pick.
I think that's wrong. I can say it.
Actively wrong. Wow.
Actively wrong. It's like he's the second Seahawks second best running back. And I think it's probably five times harder to be a 1,000-yard receiver than it is to be a 1,000-yard runner. I would say. Wow. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that crazy. Like, I feel like if you put in almost any running back and you give them enough carries that they're gonna do that. Whereas you can roll out a bad receiver on a ton of routes, and they're not gonna get to 1,000 yards. Like you have to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking me plugged into either role, and I'm thinking it would take about.
I said any running back, not any podcaster,
any random podcaster. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it definitely is easier. You know, if you're getting the workload, and certainly it feels like receiving production is more a product of talent than running back, which is more of a product of opportunity. So I agree with the sentiment there for sure. I mean, I think Walker is one of those guys where I think his flashes are really impressive. And so I think people are, you know, really getting impressed by the flashiness when he has really struggled for more consistency. I think I'd have to look at the numbers, but I don't think he has a very good success rate this season. And again, like, I think
the flashes have been good too. Like, I'm not saying he hasn't
something
been,
wrong.
He hasn't been good. Like, he hasn't been a, like, yeah, I'm not saying he hasn't been good.
So yeah, he's 39th out of 40 qualifying backs per Football Outsiders in success rate this season.
Ooh.
Which, I mean, you know, like, if you hit enough home runs, the success rate isn't as important. He's hit some home runs, but I don't know that he's hit enough to be a guy who I would peg as my offensive rookie of the year. So maybe I agree with you. Maybe I think it would be wrong, but I think he's 3 behind the 2 receivers for me.
Cool.
And then the Cardinals.
We're aligned.
Yeah. The Cardinals we're going to finish up with. They're a mess. I mean, pretty much everything's going wrong there. I went with Zach Allen. Who I think has had a nice fourth-year breakout. He has 5.5 sacks. He has 8 pass breakups. Really impressive to knock down 8 passes as a defensive lineman. 19 quarterback hits, moves all around the defensive line. You know, he's probably best in the interior, maybe as a 4-3 tackle or a 5-technique defensive end and a 3-4. Of course, teams play in their sub-package anyway, so really doesn't matter at the end of the day. But I think he is a player where he's going to be a free agent this year. Don't know if the Cardinals are going to have the cap space to re-sign him. Kind of could be like a DJ Reader where he gets a bigger deal than anybody expects, and he's a really valuable part of a great defense over the next 3 or 4 seasons.
I love that one. I'm with you on Zach Allen. I think that's totally agree. No, he's been good. He's 8th in pass rush win rate among defensive tackles, and I think he's pretty good in run stop as well. He's been one of those guys that, like, when I tweet out the charts, you know, he kind of pops. He puts himself in a category of, like, surrounded by players that we think of as being really good, like a Quinnen Williams and Jonathan Allen, Hargrave, Grady Jarrett. And so when you put your surround yourself with those guys, like, it, you know, it shows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Seth, we found something good to say about the worst teams in football. Until next time, where can people check out your work?
Just on Twitter at Seth Walder. That's the easiest spot. And then, of course, ESPN.com.
I will ask you one more question, Seth. Are you prepared to bet against Nick Bosa having any more sacks during the postseason?
In a weird way, Bill, I have my biggest bet against Nick Bosa coming up, because I did sprinkle a couple dollars on Hassan Reddick to lead the league in sacks going into this season.
Nice.
At 100-1, and he is 1.5 sacks back from Nick Bosa. So if Nick Bosa wants to really do me a solid, take this week off, and he's cost me enough, you know. So for those that don't know, I've had this sack model each, and I've been betting it, and each week it tells me to bet against Nick Bosa, and every week I'm wrong, and every week I go back for more, and every week Nick Bosa gets more and more sacks. He's good. What can I say?
It's settled. This podcast told you what's right about the Texans, what's right about the Bears, and what's good about Nick Bosa. Seth, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest, ESPN's Seth Walder. Seth does excellent work covering the NFL for us here at the Worldwide Leader. Strongly recommend you follow him on Twitter at Seth Walder as well. Hope you guys had a great holiday. We took last week off, but we'll be back, of course, every week during the upcoming postseason. Let's talk about all things NFL. Hope you guys are having a great new year and more audio next week.